I'm JG Michael, and this is Parallax Views. Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. Before we get to this edition of the show, I just want to promote Wall Street Window, a website maintained by Mike Swanson that provides valuable insights on both financial markets and geopolitics. It's been around since 2003, and its slogan is "Be in the Know," and I highly recommend it as daily reading. So go on over to wallstreetwindow.com and keep yourself informed. This edition of Parallax Views is brought to you by the $10 and above tier supporters of Parallax Views on Patreon. So, with that in mind, producers credit shoutouts to Gunner, Mark, Alexander, Catherine, Tilo, Emilia, Jeff, John, Bert, Brian, Elliot, Michael, Brace, Nick,
Meresham,
Galen, Arlen, Beau, Gigadelic Media, Chance, Chase, Dan,
David H, Y Kellerman, Sade 13,
Kathleen, David,
Ava,
Bob,
The West Bank Robbery Podcast,
Jamie,
Enoch,
Gary,
Max,
Ishtofer, James, Martin, Matthew Ho,
Brian,
Nobody, Thomas, and Dano. And now on to the show.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the show, we've got something a little bit different for you. You know me, I like to delve into outre topics once in a while, and, you know, it's nice to have a break from talking about current events and politics and the like to discuss, you know, culture-related topics and, you know, things like, say, pro wrestling. Bit of a lighter topic, although we're going to be talking about a type of wrestling that is not as light, namely deathmatch wrestling. It's a form of pro wrestling that involves weapons like light tubes, and as you'll find out in the following conversation, even weed whackers, as well as wrestlers taking dives off high ledges onto everything from flaming tables to glass. There's even barbed wire matches. It's the most outlaw punk rock form of pro wrestling imaginable, and it's rather controversial. Many, both in the wrestling world and outside of it, frown upon deathmatch wrestling, seeing it as a barbaric display of ultra-violence. However, it's also gained some interesting fans over the years. For example, the deathmatch wrestling promotion Game Changer Wrestling has become known for its LGBTQ+ fans. And the breakout filmmaking duo known as Raka Raka, or the Philippou Brothers, who made waves for last year's horror hit Talk to Me, are not only making a documentary about deathmatch wrestling, but also have been participants in the deathmatch wrestling scene. They've even talked about it on the Joe Rogan Experience. Meanwhile, the famous actor David Arquette wrestled in a deathmatch with one of the genre's most legendary and notorious figures, Nick Gage, a few years ago. In a way, deathmatch wrestling has kind of broken into the mainstream. I mean, hell, when you have Joe Rogan doing a whole segment on it, I don't know what you call that other than some mainstream coverage. So what's the deal with deathmatch wrestling? Is it just a violent spectacle of barbarity, or is there more to it than that? And what's it like to be a deathmatch wrestler? I turned to Mike Kruger, a deathmatch wrestler from Arizona, to answer those questions and many more. I hope you enjoy the conversation to follow, and maybe it'll give you a new perspective on this punk rock form of pro wrestling.
even if you're not a fan of pro wrestling, I think you'll find this conversation to be fascinating. So with that said, let's get right to it. Welcome to Parallax Views, hailing from parts unknown, Mike Krueger, deathmatch wrestler. And he's looking at me with his mask on and giving me the heebie-jeebies.
What's up, man? Glad to be here. So yeah, Michael Krueger, known in the deathmatch scene for the last decade now, basically. Mainly out of California and the West Coast, but I have traveled down south and stuff like that. And yeah, I also do a podcast called Flesh Wound Features. So if you enjoy hearing me talk here, make sure to go check that out.
Definitely check out Flesh Wound Features. They're one of my favorite horror movie podcasts. But Mike, I guess the first thing I wanted to ask you, for people that, you know, may have heard about deathmatch wrestling in passing, or they don't know about it, or they've only seen like the Vice documentary from Dark Side of the Ring on Nick Gage, or maybe they're just completely befuddled. What is deathmatch wrestling? I've never heard of this. What's your definition of it? And what's different from deathmatch wrestling and hardcore wrestling?
Okay, so what deathmatch wrestling is it's professional wrestling, but with weapons. And when it's done right, it's the same art, just you're adding weapons in there. Now, granted, deathmatch wrestling has gotten a reputation, and rightfully so, for just being like displays of violence, and there not really being any art form to it at all. But with just like any type of wrestling, there's good and bad sides of it. But the good, it's pro wrestling with weapons. That's exactly what it is. Now, the difference between hardcore wrestling and deathmatch wrestling is hardcore wrestling, in my opinion, is more like tables and chairs and, you know, kendo sticks and stuff like that. Deathmatch wrestling is stuff that can make you bleed, stuff that could actually kill you. Barbed wire, glass, thumbtacks, stuff like that. And then if you want to get into like the quote unquote definition of what a death match is, and like what's the difference between that and a hardcore match, like WWE has had multiple matches that I would consider death matches, like Edge versus Mick Foley at WrestleMania 22. I would totally consider that a death match. Same with
that was the one where he went through the flaming table, right?
Correct. Correct. And they also used a lot of barbed wire spots in the match. And same thing with like any of the extreme rules matches that involved stuff like barbed wire and fire. And like deathmatch to me is just like the extra step. It's more stuff that's going to make you bleed, cut you open, severely injure you, fire, stuff like that.
So when people find out that you do deathmatch wrestling, what are their like responses? Because I know it can vary. I know people that like really, really love deathmatch wrestling, and they come from a lot of different backgrounds, the people that like it, like people all over the political spectrum. I even know like teachers that are fans.
Really?
Of it. Yeah, there's a guy, Michael Muhammad Knight. He's a Muslim convert that writes, you know, like Muslim youth fiction. You know, like punk Muslim youth fiction. And he's really well known in the Muslim community. But he's like a giant fan of Necro Butcher. And he even did like a wrestling match at one point. So it's all over the place, the fandom. But then you also meet people that are like, I do not get this. And they sort of have this like really negative view of it. So how do people react when they find out that you're a deathmatch wrestler?
I mean, it's mostly negative, to be honest with you, especially when it comes to the pro wrestling community. It's funny. I love the guy to death that did this shit. He's one of my good friends that I came up with in pro wrestling, but I hadn't seen the guy in like 10 years. And we ended up working together at this convention. He was just like, we're not doing any deathmatch shit, right? I'm like, Nate, like, you know, I fucking know how to wrestle. We came up together, man. Like, that's not all I fucking do. And that's kind of the thing that is frustrating when you are a deathmatch wrestler that also does regular wrestling as well. Like, I didn't just do death matches my whole career. That's what I'm known for. But I wrestle more regular matches than I do death matches. So I've gotten this reputation of that's all I know how to do. And then I'll go and wrestle people and they'll be like, wow, you know how to work. And I'm like, yeah, no shit, dude. Because I'm not just like a death match wrestler. I'm a professional wrestler that just dabbles in that art. And I prefer it because in my opinion, it's more real and it makes me feel more alive. Like, I can get into that in a little bit, but like deathmatch wrestling gives me a lot, gives me a lot more than professional wrestling does personally.
I was going to say, especially nowadays where like, I can see the appeal of deathmatch wrestling in so much as, you know, you watch a lot of wrestling now and you'll just see guys doing these spots where they're like, I'm going to jump into 10 guys after planching off the ropes, and I'm like, you know, in a real fight you would just move out of the way and let the guy like die, you know, outside the ring. And I'm like, it just feels like I'm watching Cirque du Soleil when I watch mainstream wrestling now.
It's very much like that, and that's kind of why I've gravitated towards deathmatch wrestling a lot. Like, granted, you had there's plenty of hard-hitting big hosses in the indie wrestling scene that are fantastic, but there's nothing more hard-hitting than a death match, and that's kind of why I like that full contact. You know, I feel like I'm in a bar fight by the end of it, but shit, the fans are into it, and the one thing is, it's real. Like, there's no denying when I have a gash on my arm that's bleeding all over the place, or, you know, you're seeing welts on my head because we were headbutting the fuck out of each other in the match.
I was going to say, so since I mentioned Michael Muhammad Knight, this Muslim author that's also involved in the punk scene. Do you think there's a crossover between like punk subculture and deathmatch wrestling?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, punk and just the hardcore scene in general. There's a total because I mean, we're kind of like most of the deathmatch guys that I'm friends with are big punk fans, or they're in punk bands or in death metal bands. Like, one of my favorite guys in deathmatch wrestling, Schlack. I'm sure you know about Schlack. He's all over the punk and hardcore death metal scene, and yeah, there's definitely a huge crossover there. Also, Casanova Valentine is somebody who really brought that crossover even more to life with his no-ring deathmatch shows. He would team up with like bars and stuff that would be doing music as well. And a lot of it would be either punk.
He
or
does that in
metal.
New York or whatever, or used to.
Not just in New York though, bro. He travels all over. Like he's done Texas. He came out to Tucson, Arizona, and we did a match. He does that all over the place. And he's one of those guys, man, that like, I really have to commend, because he kind of just had that idea of doing these no ring shows and started booking these big deathmatch names on it. And it eventually got him out there. Like, and now he's one of the top deathmatch guys in the world. Really self-made guy.
So what do you think draws people to deathmatch wrestling? Because, you know, I used to be one of those people that kind of looked down on it. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I was introduced towards more of it. And I'm like, oh, maybe there is something more here. And I can sort of understand why there's people that are really into it. What do you think draws people to it, though?
I think it's because it's a very it's become a very big fuck you to pro wrestling as well. We are the punks and the guys that don't want to confine by the norm, and we are the misfits of professional wrestling. But goddamn, some of us are really, really fucking good at what we do. And I think that's just the one thing that has gotten fans to be more accepting of it over time. A big part of that is because of GCW and the popularity there. I think
that's game changer, right?
Game changer wrestling. Yeah. I think that kind of skyrocketed the popularity and the more acceptance of death wrestling, especially with guys like Nick Gage and stuff, because he's just become such a indie darling that people now can like kind of be a little bit more open to watching a death match, especially now that GCW, they always at least throw one in there. So it kind of forces people to be more accepting of it too. But what really draws people to it, I think, is that it's just so different. And also just the guys that do it, like, you have to really fucking love wrestling in order to do some of the shit that we do to our bodies.
Do you think it's the one style of wrestling, not to interrupt you, but do you think in some ways it's the one style where I guess there's certain deathmatch wrestlers where you like can believe that it's almost like you actually believe that it's a shoot in a way, even if you know it's not. Like, it's sort of like with the wrestler New Jack, you know, you always had in the back of your head, is he going to kill someone for real in the ring? You know, and I think that's the same with Nick Gage. There's something like, there's a danger to it that I think
I mean, dude, he's a felon. Like, he legitimately went to prison and did prison time. Like, that's no fucking gimmick. And everybody, it's just a much more real experience than your normal pro wrestling. And not to you know, slight normal pro wrestling at all. I love it, and it's why I, you know, became a wrestler. But also just deathmatch wrestling is it's very, very hard to fake anything that we do, and the dedication that you have to dedication or stupidity, whatever way you want to look at it, but you really have to open up yourself for some pain, and not even just pain in the moment, like pain during the healing process, nights of just not being able to sleep on your back because it's too cut the fuck up. Stuff like that. You have to be really dedicated to the art form in order to do it. And
I remember when I used to talk to my dad about wrestling. He grew up on like Bruno Sammartino.
Oh yeah.
So what's funny is, you know, there were wrestlers that he's like, oh, they're fake. They're fake. You know, that guy's, oh, this is a bullshit match. But then if like the Sheik, you know, from Detroit came in, he's like, well, the Sheik's real though. That guy's actually crazy. Or, you know, Abdullah the Butcher comes to town. You know, Abdullah's actually crazy. That's the real guy. I feel that's how deathmatch wrestlers are in a way. Like, there are generations version of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, there's a lot more of us than just, you know, those five guys that did that style back in the day. And it's just become, and also just with anything in wrestling, it's just ramped up to more dangerous, more blood, more gore, more violence. But hell, if you're into all of those things, I mean, deathmatch wrestling is really a welcoming community for you and a welcoming art form of professional wrestling that you're going to enjoy.
Do you think it's just the blood and guts that people are into, or do you think there's more to it? Because I do think if you look at someone like Nick Gage, he knows how to interact with the audience.
I know people that are into it just for the blood and guts, but there are, I think deathmatch wrestling back in the day was more blood and guts and just whatever you can get your hands on. And now it's just held to a little bit more of a higher standard with what you have to do. So you have to know how to wrestle, and you have to know how to interact with the crowd and do spots with the weapons. But also at the same time, I think the novelty to deathmatch wrestling now, like, it's hard to explain. Like, I feel like back in the day, you could, like, if you had a really good deathmatch, it was more, and like technically good, it was more praised. But now it is a little bit like in between, is it a good match or just overly violent? And it just varies on what the fans are into, but it is kind of split down the middle.
Do you think there is an element of the theatrical and sort of storytelling to deathmatch wrestling that some people overlook?
100%. People, and it's not, again, it's not in a lot of the high level deathmatch wrestling matches now, but like if you look at people like Masada, people like Necro Butcher, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, other people that are really, really good at like utilizing spots, Atticus Koger, okay, just there's certain wrestlers out there that they'll do spots to get into the gimmicks, like the weapons and stuff. And then there's other people that it's just train wreck matches. We call it hack and slash. Like the definition of that is like you go and you watch like I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but like Nick Gage and Schlapp, like they're just fucking hack and slash beating the shit out of each other the whole time. And then with guys like Masada and Drake Younger, they're going to be doing chain wrestling in the top, in the beginning of the match, and working their way towards the weapons. And then, you know, maybe he gets his out of there. He's trying to push him into the weapon. They break off. It, like, it's more of a technical style of it. And the technical style of it does get way overlooked. And I think personally, that's the best type of deathmatch wrestling, even though every now and again you get two big guys just fucking trying to kill each other. That's always fun too. But
when it comes to like what you like in a deathmatch, like do you think sometimes there needs to be more selling, less selling? Like how should
more selling all the way? There's not enough selling in deathmatch wrestling, unfortunately.
Selling, for people that don't know, is when you take the hit, you really, you know, you sell it to the audience that you're hurt.
Yeah. And because of, no, like selling's a big problem now in deathmatch wrestling, because you could get away with a lot less and get a lot more out of less. But now the level of violence you have to fucking commit to get a reaction from people is pretty, it's pretty immense. And it's kind of, and it's because people don't sell enough, and they just like go to the next thing, to the next thing, and to the next thing. And the problem with that is you'll have those matches where it's just like hit people with shit, and like not register anything. And then when you have somebody that starts to sell later on in the show, the fans automatically aren't going to be as into it, because they just saw like a car wreck in front of them, and now they're trying to watch storytelling, and it's not going to register because they just saw all that fast violence right ahead.
Is the psychology of a death match different from other types of wrestling matches in your view, or no?
Not necessarily. I think it's just a way of utilizing the weapons that are there in the match. For example, psychology wise, if I was in a death match with somebody, like I would want the match to start out with both of us trying to utilize whatever the gimmick is that's there. So if it's a barbed wire match, we're trying to work our way towards the barbed wire. And then maybe he gets out of it and tries to push me into the barbed wire. I get out of it, try to push him. We break, fucking maybe go back into another spot, and then he's clotheslining me. I'm starting to get close to the barbed wire. He's clotheslining me again. I'm starting to get close to the barbed wire. He goes and it tries to hit me. I pick him up, I slam him in it. That's how you get into the fucking first hit of the bar. Like, that's the type of stuff that I try to do. Rather than just right away, I grab the motherfucker by his throat and fucking jam him right into that barbed wire in the first 5 seconds of the match.
Now, for people that aren't in the wrestling scene that are listening to this and maybe learning for the first time about all of this, how much of deathmatch wrestling has an element of improvisation to it? Because I've seen deathmatches where the gimmick is bring your own, the fans bring weapons. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have an infamous match with me and Schlack, where it's a fans bring the weapons match. And yeah, we had no idea what half of the shit was that was going to be out there. All we knew was like, all right, we have this spot in the beginning, this spot here, this is the finish. Let's go out there and fucking and wing it and see what happens. And that's how a lot of it is. It also just depends on what type of match it is too. Some matches call for more talking about stuff before you go out there, and then there's other stuff where you could just like fans bring the weapons are kind of easy, because it's just like those are very much like I hit you with something, I try to hit you with something else, I miss, then you hit me with it type of matches.
How do you come up with the spots in a match? Like,
so it just the way I look at it always is just first off, like, what makes sense for my character? because I play a monster and a big guy, that the way I'm going to tackle a spot is going to be different than somebody like 190 pounds tackles the way to get into a spot. So that has a lot to do with it. Also, just what makes sense, where we are in the match. Pro wrestling, just in general, that you can kind of map out areas of where what mat, like basically the way I was taught is like there's different stages of each match, and you can kind of pinpoint any match that you want to take out there. So that also has to do with like, all right, well, does this spot make sense in the heat? Or if this guy has to come back now, you know, that's when I'm going to utilize like a comeback spot or something like that.
So when it comes to a spot like being thrown into light tubes, how do you like prepare yourself for that? How do you like, I mean,
a big thing is, with just anytime you're taking a web, or just honestly in general with wrestling, is commitment to just giving up your fucking body. I think a big thing with a lot of people is they try to protect themselves. And when you try to do that, sometimes you fuck yourself up way worse. So you kind of just have to commit. So for example, a year ago, I was getting drop kicked into a bunch of light tubes in a corner. I could have took that drop kick and kind of just fell back into it, but because of me knowing me, I want to make sure all those tubes break. I want to make sure the spot looks good. I tossed myself and just totally like gave up my whole body falling into this shit. And like, that's kind of like a big thing, is just like commitment and like making sure that you don't hesitate before you go into a light tube gimmick, or, you know, a barbed wire, whatever it is. But that's also just with wrestling, like, a big part of like when botches happen are when you're not fully just throwing yourself into the move or 100% committing to it.
Now, with regards to weapons, are like, do you gimmick some stuff and not other stuff? Like
most of the time, nothing's gimmicked.
Okay. Okay.
Like there's certain things, like, for example, there's a certain type of light tube that breaks better and is more safe than another one. T-12s, they shatter. T-8s, they snap. T-8s are what killed Nick Gage. And Nick Gage did get brought back to life, but yeah, he got killed by a T-8 that snapped and punctured.
If people don't know about that story, he was dead for 7 minutes after falling into light tubes and then revived, which is crazy. Yeah,
he fell into light tubes, started bleeding out, tried to get back in the ring. They had to stop him. And then he eventually passed out from blood loss and died in that helicopter, and they revived his ass. Yeah. Crazy fucking story. And that's a big reason why like T8s are a big no-no in the deathmatch scene now. But like, there's little things like that, but for the most part, nothing's really gimmicked.
Now,
for example, there's plenty of death matches out there where you see somebody get hit in the head with a fucking keyboard. It's always a real keyboard, and let me tell you, it always sucks.
So what about the glass? Is it because do you guys use stunt glass or sugar glass or whatever it's called?
No. Okay. No. So the only thing that,
I mean, I'm assuming it would be different if we're talking about like, I always thought maybe like AEW, when they do those spots, it could be sugar glass. I think
AEW 100% they
use. But you're working the indies, that's a little bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They AEW, they 100% use certain things gimmicked. That big spot Darby Allin just recently took, though, that type of sheet of glass, I think they're called like shower glass doors. It's a different type of glass. It's not just like straight up like window glass, basically. But instead of like, so like when that type of glass breaks, it shatters. But it is real glass. I mean, it's not fucking, it's definitely not sugar glass or anything like that. That is stuff that's usually utilized when you see people go through the panes of glass and stuff. And that's what Darby used. But AEW has also used fake glass and other shit too. Which honestly, I have no problem with. If you have that fucking budget, but by all means, I wish that we could use fake glass, but we don't. And I mean, it is what it is. But it's kind of like, it's kind of just one of the things that you deal with in death matches, being a death match wrestler.
So you mentioned Nick Gage falling into those light tubes and then bleeding out and saying, I want to get back into the ring. So I was going to say, I think deathmatch wrestlers can be really competitive. You know, like yeah. Nick Gage is like, no, I want to go back out there and finish the match.
Yeah.
So even if the match is predetermined, I think you guys can get really competitive, especially about like, I want to top the other guy.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, can you talk about that? And does it ever get like stiff in the ring? Like, do you guys ever get like, Like you're still trying to take care of each other, but maybe you hit the guy a little bit harder on a punch or a chop.
I mean, it's definitely stiff more times than not, especially with deathmatch wrestling. I mean, we're all pretty snug with each other. As far as like the competitiveness, though, like that is 100% a thing. You're always trying to find that next gross out moment that's gonna fucking top, you know, whoever else just did the coolest spot of the week type thing. That's a mentality that can creep in. Granted, it's not a good one. I fucking ended up taking 7 weed whacker shots because of that mentality. And that was not, I still regret that. Like, I'm fucking sitting there and I'm like, all right, there's a weed whacker in my match. What can I do with a weed whacker that's never been done before? And in my head, I'm like, well, I've never seen anybody just get completely massacred with it more than like once.
You
like
used that a never weed whacker in a match?
Oh yeah, yeah. Schlack hit me with a weed whacker 7 times. My arms were completely covered in weed whacker marks by the end of the night.
What do you think drives a guy like you or Schlack or Masada? Because I mean, this is not a type of wrestling that it's not going to bring in like big sponsors or anything, right?
Absolutely not.
There is a niche audience for it. And what is it that drives you? Is it just the intimacy of the audience and how into it they are? Or what drives you on it?
I mean, there's a lot of things, bro. A big thing is the audience and just kind of the lineage of deathmatch wrestling, I think, is a big drive for me. The fact that I want to be a part of that history because it is such a niche thing that in 20 years when we're looking back on just, you know, the world of deathmatch wrestling, because I do firmly believe eventually this thing called deathmatch wrestling is going to end, especially, and I think it's going to be sooner than later because of how mainstream it is getting now.
I want to get into that. We'll go back to that, but go on.
So I think just being a part of the history is a big driving force for a lot of us. And not to mention, dude, it gives you the craziest adrenaline rush that is the greatest drug that I have ever taken in my life. It is very much addicting. It is very much a drug. There's something very macho about being able to survive this type of shit and coming out on the other end of it. And there, that also dives into, I firmly believe that most of us that do this have severe psychological problems one way or the other. A lot of us trauma. I don't know if you've seen Sick Nick Mondo's documentary, but Sick Nick Mondo had this conversation with Wife Beater about why they do what they do. And just Wife Beater took one look at him and was like, bad childhood. And that fucking 100% resonates with me. I think, and this is getting on a little bit of a deep level, but I think a big reason why I'm so driven to do these things to my body is because very much in my younger years, I was called a pussy by my father. And like, I think being able to overcome all this shit and kind of just walk it off is me like proving them wrong in my head in a really fucked up way. So there's a lot of deep, dark shit like that comes into it as well.
I got to ask, when it comes to the audience and the fans of deathmatch wrestling, it's really interesting to me because I think deathmatch wrestling is one of the few genres in entertainment and culture that weirdly transcends our political culture wars. In that, what I'm getting at is, I know people that are like really like culturally right wing that like deathmatch wrestling. I also know people that are like that would be called quote unquote woke, or even like more specifically, I know like LGBTQ people that are really really into deathmatch wrestling.
That's become more of a thing in the last few years.
I even saw Nick Gage was like defending trans people and whatnot at shows.
GCW has a big part of that.
They have that Effie's Big Gay Brunch show, mm-hmm. right?
I think Effie specifically is a huge part, and just pro wrestling in general, the LGBTQ community and pro wrestling has like really come together over the last, I would say it started probably around like 2015, 2016, and it just become like a very big thing now in the wrestling community. But yeah, with guys like Effie and again, like you said, Nick Gage and a lot of those GCW guys. I mean, I would say
I'm not trying to bring politics into it.
It's very much a relevant thing because let me tell you, just political stuff and deathmatch wrestling, like. It comes over all the fucking time. Like, there's plenty of, if you ever want a good laugh, go down that rabbit hole of drama because it's all over the place.
I feel like there's a whole like XPW versus GCW thing in a lot of ways.
That's a big thing. But like, I'm just gonna bring this up. Like, I just find it really ironic that everybody were very fuck you to certain individuals that XPW used in the very beginning due to politics. And now that they don't work for XPW, all of a sudden they're forgiven for their political stance. I don't understand. Like, I don't understand all the fan drama. It's really, it can get really tiresome sometimes because it's very hypocritical. Like, they'll hate this guy for a little bit because he works this company because he has this opinion. But the second
that's not just deathmatch wrestling. Pro wrestling fans in general. I found
It's just wrestling fans in general.
I've often joked to people that, you know, a lot of the people who really hate WWE, especially like the smart mark journalists, I feel like they're kind of like defenders of Southern wrestling even more than they are objective journalists.
But, yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, that plays into it a lot, but it is interesting to me. You mentioned the macho aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you do have these LGBTQ fans of it. Like, why do you think it draws in such a diverse audience?
Again, it's just different. Like, you know, with that, it's different. It's something that people scoff at a lot. So it's kind of
last outlaw form of entertainment in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think so. And just also it's very like, I specifically with like why I think it draws the LGBTQ community is we're just ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, we do this shit and like are ourselves, and that's why we do it. If we gave a fuck about what anybody else thought about us, most of us wouldn't be doing deathmatch wrestling. So I think that's a big draw to it too.
So you mentioned it becoming more mainstream. So I'll say this, you know, to me, it's crazy that we had a few years ago the actor David Arquette returning to wrestling, but not just returning to wrestling. He returned to do a death match with, Nick Gage.
Yeah, because he thought that was going to get him over with the fans.
Right. So you have that. And then now you have the Raka Raka brothers who did, what was it? Talk to Me. You know, they're making like a death match documentary. They were just on Joe Rogan.
Dude, and they do death matches too. Like Raka Raka, he does that Ronald McDonald character and has had multiple. Like, he had a death match, like a legit death match with Jimmy Lloyd, but he was doing backyard wrestling shit way back in the day. I've been following those guys for a really long time, and it is crazy that like.
Well, I mean, just, not to interrupt you, but just imagine like Joe Rogan does a whole segment on Deathmatch Wrestling.
Yeah.
With those two guys. And it's that's like 10 million people listening to, you know, these guys talk about Deathmatch Wrestling. It really has gone mainstream in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And it's and like I said, it worries me because I feel like it's going to get a lot more people and a lot more commissions cracking down on it. It is very hard to have death matches in certain states.
Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So basically there's like commissions in certain areas, like in New York, you can't have like blood or there's certain rules and regulations.
Casanova
Valentine. Yeah. That's why he does the no ring thing. Cause he gets around it.
Right. He calls it performance art, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, anyways, go on. Yeah. 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 Let's talk more about the obstacles of deathmatch wrestling.
Yeah. So Casanova gets away with it because it's called performance art, but if it takes place in the ring, it's considered a sporting event. And then that's when commissions get involved. And with commissions, just in general, a lot of people say it's a better thing and it protects the wrestlers and blah, 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 but it is a fucking big ass hassle on everybody. And they're also very strict in certain areas. You can't do blood. There's actually a GCW show that got shut down in its main event because somebody started bleeding. And stuff like that happens a lot. And it's very like hard for deathmatch wrestling to happen in those states. So usually it's around a bordering state like Philadelphia or New Jersey and stuff like that.
That explains why a lot of the deathmatch wrestling that I was aware of when I was a teenager came out of New Jersey and Philadelphia. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, another thing I wanted to ask you about was when you're working with another guy in a death match, talk about the level of trust that you have with each other during that match and pulling off the spots.
It's very much like a roll of the dice when it comes to spots or just people in general that you can rely on being safe. But yeah, it takes a lot of trust, but also just it takes a lot of just not giving a fuck too, because a lot of times it doesn't work out in the way. And like, for example, if some guy's good on three spots in a row, right? But then the fourth spot, he fucks up and I kind of hurt myself on it. I kind of have to just like I can't be pissed off in the moment. I have to just be like, fuck it. I got to keep going because I got to get to the next thing. So it does take a certain level of trust, but it also takes a big, like, you have to like not give a fuck until the match is over type of thing too, which is difficult for some people.
What's the worst botch you've ever had, or where someone botched a move and it hurt you?
I haven't had anything like severely hurt me. As far as like somebody doing something to me, but I've had somebody like grab me and like do a DDT out of nowhere that I wasn't expecting. And I've given myself like a stinger and like lost feeling in my hand for a little bit. I was like, oh shit. But like, as soon as it came back, it was just like, whatever. And I don't even think I talked to the guy about it.
It was so spontaneous that you didn't know how to land it,
dude just grabbed me out. Like, so we were fighting on the apron, right? And fucking like, he started fighting back on me and then he just hooked me and went DDT. And I was just like, what? Like, before I even knew what the fuck was it, like, he hit me and then grabbed me in the headlock and was like DDT and fell back. I was like, oh, like, didn't. And so I couldn't take it properly. So I landed on my neck a little bit, fucking get, and it gave me a little bit of a stinger, which like means you fuck up your neck and you kind of lose feeling a little bit, but it comes back to you pretty quick.
In terms of, I wanted to ask you about this question. The thing I always hear about deathmatch wrestling from people that are critics of it is, you know, these guys don't actually know how to wrestle. I remember Sabu used to say that. He's like, well, you know, Necro Butcher is someone who did deathmatches first and then he learned how to wrestle. And I've heard that criticism from a lot of people, but I think there are guys, including yourself, that have wrestling backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
I know Masada is a guy that knows how to wrestle, but he does death matches. Do you think people have any misperceptions about deathmatch wrestling and the wrestlers that engage in it?
I would say it's about I would say it's about 80% of deathmatch wrestlers really know how to wrestle and know how to work. But the 20% that's out there, that's also the 20% when there's a botch or something looks like shit, it gets shared on social media, and then people just have that perception that that's what all of us come from. But I think especially now, most of the top deathmatch wrestlers, I mean, they all can go. Like Schlack knows how to wrestle. Fucking Masada knows how to wrestle. Alex Colon knows how to wrestle. I can, go on and on, but all the guys that are at the top of the level making money doing it, they all know how to work, and they could easily make money not doing the weapons stuff. But again, we just like it.
So I got to ask, for people that don't know deathmatch wrestling, if you had to tell someone the Mount Rushmore of deathmatch wrestling, who's the Mount Rushmore?
Of all time is very, very, very fucking hard for me. I have to kind of like split it. So if I was gonna do a Mount Rushmore of modern like deathmatch wrestling, which would be like anything from like 2000 to now, I would go with Masada. Absolutely. Jun Kasai, Abdullah Kobayashi, and Necro Butcher.
So, what is it that makes those four special?
Okay, so Masada, for one, I've seen him just absolutely fucking kill it in deathmatch after deathmatch after deathmatch, and it involves great spots with great wrestling, and he actually like works very, very well. Everything he does makes sense, and everything he does looks real. And basically, it's because he's usually beating the fuck out of the guy. But it, I Masada to me is like the Undertaker of deathmatch wrestling.
He's known for a particular spot, right? The with
The
the
skewers.
yeah, he puts the skewers in the guy's head. Yeah.
Yep, he invented the skewer spot with the other guy that in my Mount Rushmore, which is Jun Kasai, and he's one of the biggest deathmatch wrestlers in Japan of all time. He's come here a few times, but mainly worked out of Japan, and he's just kind of like been the poster boy of the deathmatch genre for the last 24 years. And he's the guy, like, if you ever look up like this, the like, if you just type in deathmatch back, Jun Kasai's back pops up, and it just like show all his scars and stuff. And he's just put on some fucking amazing bangers. And also, he's another guy I can credit to like bringing more respect to deathmatch wrestling, because it even got to the point where New Japan Pro Wrestling started working with him and let him have a deathmatch on a New Japan show with El Dorado, which blew my fucking mind, because I never thought I was going to see that again. They hadn't done anything like that since Onita, which I thought was just fantastic. So yeah, Jun Kasai is up there. Abdullah Kobayashi also is another guy out of Japan, but he's just like the most entertaining guy in deathmatch wrestling, in my opinion. And he's one of the guys that brings comedy to deathmatch wrestling, but does it very well, and also just looks like a fucking maniac too. So he's on there. And then just Necro Butcher fucking speaks for himself. He's a fucking living
He's the
legend.
favorite wrestler of WWE, Seth Rollins, I believe.
Yep. Well, yeah, and
Like
Seth.
legit, Seth Rollins like said in an interview, he's like, he's the best.
Yeah, and well, and Seth's reasoning was cool, because he said it's because of just like the way he takes his moves and the way he builds his match. It feels so like authentic and such like a real fight, and it does. And Necro, again, there's
Well, even
nothing.
when you see him like busted open, he's bleeding everywhere and he wins the match anyways. There's something like really, I don't know, there's like a profoundness to it. Like it's almost like watching a fucking movie character triumph, you know, when he's victorious. Yeah.
It's like it's a very Terry Funk-esque aspect. But real quick, I just wanted to say, if I wasn't doing just modern deathmatch wrestling, like, and I my old school would be Terry Funk, Onita, Matsunaga, and Mr. Pogo.
I was going to say, what's the difference between Modern deathmatch and like FMW, the stuff you just mentioned.
Just modern deathmatch wrestling is just very different. It's a lot more violent, and the wrestling is just a lot better, in my opinion. Like, Mr. Pogo was a very iconic character.
This is in Japan for people that are unfamiliar.
Yeah, was a very iconic character, but he also like wasn't the greatest technical wrestler ever either. He was very much a punch and kick guy. Just the genre was very different back then, and like if you look at an FMW deathmatch from the 90s or late 80s, and then you look at something from 2005, it's on such a different level of like genre. Like it's just very different for me because of the weapons and just the way the matches are stylized.
It's funny you mention Onita and Terry Funk, because I remember their I think it was an exploding death match, right? Mm-hmm. Or exploding barbed wire. You know, that I consider that one of the greatest matches of all time. Oh, I've often called it like the doom metal equivalent. You know, if I could compare that match to a musical genre, it would be like doom metal, because you just hear this like siren going off every like 5 seconds, and it's like counting down.
No, and you're getting anxiety for the fucking poor wrestlers that shit's about to explode on. Like,
the ending is so iconic, though. The violence is crazy, but like the ending is like this incredible story where Onita has to save Funk after he beat him, because he's like, no, he's my hero, and he jumps on his body as the ring explodes. I mean, you don't get storytelling like that.
And then AEW tried to do
that. Oh, it was terrible.
Oh my God.
But that was a match where I'm like, if people, there's more to it than just the violence. Like, the violence is part of it, but there's just something like, you know, the young Onita is wrestling his hero who hates him, but he saves him at the end. I mean, it really is like poetic storytelling in a way, you know?
Oh yeah. There's specifically like certain death matches out there that I've seen where like there's an amazing story, like a passing of the torch type of thing going on. A great example of that is like Matt Tremont versus Ricky Shane Page. This I think it's from like 2014 or 2015, but it's this amazing death match where it's just like basically Matt Tremont passing the torch because Ricky Shane Page was the new guy in the death match scene at that point and had been so consistent that Matt was finally giving his title for it.
It's funny. I think Ricky Shane Page is in MLW now.
Yep. He's an MLW. Akira's an MLW, and so is my buddy Jeff Cannonball.
Oh, that's cool. I bring that up because a lot of these guys aren't just deathmatch wrestlers, including yourself. You don't just do these kind of matches.
I would say there's a solid percentage of us out there that like regularly take regular bookings as well. It's kind of hard because when you do deathmatch wrestling, it does hurt the people that do want to book you as well.
What do you mean?
So like just because you have the reputation of a deathmatch wrestler, getting booked on regular shows can be difficult sometimes because people think that's all you do or that's all that you know how to do. And it's just like, man, I got a fucking like an 80s style pro wrestling gimmick on me, motherfucker. Like, I know how to work too. I just, again, I'm a horror movie monster. Like, why wouldn't I roll around in blood?
So your gimmick too, that you're possessed by the mask, right?
So my gimmick is that I am possessed. Like the gimmick is that the mask possesses me and it makes me want to shed blood. But like whoever happened to wear this mask ended up being a pro wrestler. So the demon was like, good way to shed blood. That's kind of like the gimmick. It definitely can hurt your bookings elsewhere. And also just in general, bigger companies. Yeah. It's a little bit different now, but bigger companies back in the day wouldn't touch you at all if you did it.
It's crazy to think that a guy like John Moxley or Dean Ambrose, when he was in WWE, was like, he started out in deathmatch wrestling.
Yep. Yep.
I was going to ask, so I'm from like, I'm initially from Pennsylvania. So I grew up knowing about ECW and then CCW and whatnot. Are you from Southern California?
No, so I'm from Arizona.
Okay, but I thought you were involved in the
I basically wrestle in California.
What's the California scene like in the 2000s? Because I think it's something that like a lot of wrestling fans aren't familiar with.
It's basically just XPW. XPW okay. was the big thing.
For people that don't know, Extreme Pro Wrestling ran by
Mr. Rob Black.
Yes, who ran some of the craziest porn back then. Before he went to jail for the porn.
Yeah, Extreme Associates.
So
it was basically just XPW. I know there was like a couple of places that popped up like here and there. But then when XPW went under, there was a company called NexPro that kind of picked up some of it. And then once that went under, this company called UEW, which I was a part of, started coming up. And UEW is basically the big thing going in deathmatch wrestling in the West Coast up until XPW came back and up until like when GCW started coming out there.
Is there any difference between the California scene and say like that Jersey Philly scene or?
I mean, it's the Philly scene is, there's just a lot more fucking shit to do. Especially nowadays, deathmatch wrestling down here is very scarce. And in the East Coast, just it's popping, and that's where most of the big shit happens. Me and my buddy Jeff Cannonball were just talking about this, but it is a lot more convenient when you do that stuff and you live on the East Coast. Like being a West Coast deathmatch wrestler can be a struggle sometimes.
Yeah, I've even heard that, not just with like deathmatch wrestling, but like I had an ex who was involved in like the indie wrestling scene, and you know, wrestlers that were from like North Carolina and whatnot were always like, oh, I need to go out to like the East Coast to get better bookings, you know, go to like Philly, New York. Yeah.
It's easier to get discovered down there, I think. But I mean, regular wrestling in California for sure, like is booming and like, it's a good spot to be at. But when you are a deathmatch wrestler, it's hard.
So you want to talk about who's the biggest legend of, you know, the California deathmatch scene? I was going to say, you better say Supreme. Who is Supreme for people that don't know? And why is he so important to the California scene?
I mean, Supreme was just that he was the guy in XPW and was like one of the first guys doing death matches in general anywhere in the States. Him and Homeless Jimmy and Joey Chaos, and like those guys were some of the first people that brought deathmatch wrestling like to the States. Supreme was just like, his name was the Human Horror Film, and he was our, again, like he's basically like our Undertaker. He was the locker room leader anywhere he went, and he was a great friend of me and all the West Coast Deathmatch family, and he's missed dearly. We love that guy so much, man. Speaking of which, we do have a deathmatch tournament May 30th in Los Angeles, California, the Supreme Games of Violence tournament that is dedicated to him in Crimson Crown Wrestling. So if you're in the California scene, make sure to check that out May 30th.
Can you go a little bit longer or?
What's up?
Can you go a little bit longer or do you have like hard time constraint?
No, yeah, I can go longer.
Okay. Yeah, I just had a few more questions. So where do you see deathmatch wrestling headed from here? I know you said you were worried about, you know, it becoming more mainstream, but.
Yeah, I would like to say like it's going to do better, but I just think it's going to get worse.
Right.
I feel like already we hit a boom like a couple years ago, and it is starting to die down little by little. I don't know. I would say that like I see in 10 years from now, it being a lot less trendy and it kind of going back on the backbones of people. Because one thing I will say about deathmatch,
I was going to say, I think, don't be offended by this, but I think it does have a certain appeal to a certain type of urban hipster now. I mean, mentioned 100%. The bar shows that were done with Casanova in New York. Yeah, like there is like a hipster thing going on there, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot less trendy in a few years. And I think a lot of people, I don't think there's going to be that as many fans as there are right now, unfortunately. I'd hope that that's not true, but just the way I see it going, I see that it's going to be like, it's kind of like this trendy thing for everybody. I think it's going to fall out of that and kind of just fall back on the true diehards that have been fans of it for, you know, the last 20 years.
So maybe you can talk a little bit about your trajectory and how you got involved in deathmatch wrestling. I mean, we probably should have covered that earlier, but you have a pretty interesting story. I think you were an amateur guy first growing up.
Yeah. So I was an amateur wrestling guy. I wrestled in high school. I started wrestling when I was in middle school. And because I was very good, I practiced on a high school team from the time I was like 13 till I was 17. So I did really good in wrestling. Won a couple like Greco-Roman state championships. I won a freestyle state championship. As far as folk style, I wasn't as good, and that was like what actual like high school wrestling was. All the other stuff was like club and stuff. But folk style, I placed fourth my junior year, and then my senior year, I was set to win. Went undefeated my whole senior year, up until I blew my knee out. Had to rehab that for a little bit. And when I came back, I ended up getting kicked out of high school because I was fucking around with a kid in the wrestling room, and we had boxing gloves on, and we used to like beat up heavy bags for cardio and stuff. And we were fucking around, and I accidentally knocked the kid out. Well, he went to the trainer. The trainer made a big stink about it. He ended up having a concussion, and my school expelled me. And at the time I had a scholarship that I fucking completely lost, and like opportunities, because I was going to go and wrestle in college. I lost all that shit. So I fell into the world of just pro wrestling because it was something I always wanted to do. That was always the plan after college wrestling, was going and becoming a pro wrestler. So it kind of just kickstarted that. So I started training. I was like, I think it was like 3 months before my 18th birthday, I started training. And then I, was just doing regular pro wrestling for a little bit. And then when I went out to UEW in 2015, they asked me, because they were doing death matches at the time, and I was in a storyline. They brought me in to be a part of a storyline that involved deathmatch people. So they asked me if I would do it. And I was a fan of deathmatch wrestling my whole life. And like growing up, like I was a big ECW and XPW guy.
I was going to ask, what was your first exposure to deathmatch wrestling?
It was ECW, but then XPW. And then XPW, you know, went on, CZW popped up. My dad used to get CZW tapes as well. So it was pretty on regularly in the house. My dad had a pretty extensive wrestling collection. So I grew up on it. And then, first was XPW and ECW, mainly ECW. I think the first death match I ever saw was Terry Funk and Sabu in the barbed wire death match in ECW. But anyways, went to UEW and got thrown in there and started doing it ever since, and just fell in love with doing death matches. So it became my niche and became the thing I'm most known for, even though like, when you look at my wrestling career, I've had probably less than 50 death matches, and then like a shit ton of like regular ones.
What's the craziest spot you've ever done in a death match?
I mean, the weed whacker thing was pretty fucking ridiculous. I mean, taking a weed whacker shot 7 times was definitely not ideal, and it sucked. The thing that injured me the worst was I had a pumpkin thrown at my head, and it gave me the worst
pumpkin.
Yeah. So it wasn't like a full, but it was like a pumpkin about this size. Like it was a little bit smaller than my head. Marcus Crane, rest in peace. He picked it up and it was left over from the pumpkin patch death match Sage Sin Supreme. Supreme's daughter had the match right before. He picked it up, started singing Lion King, going, ah, Savenya, blah, 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 and then just tossed it on my fucking head. And the pumpkin literally split in half, and it gave me the worst concussion I've ever had in my life. Like, to the point where I, like, didn't know where the fuck I was for a good, like, 2 minutes. And then I had to come through and finish the match and then wrestle another match because of, I was told in that match why after I was concussed and like all loopy that I was winning the whole tournament, which I didn't know about.
That's wild.
Yeah, it sucked. Dude, it was the worst fucking, it was the biggest night for me pro wrestling wise because like I had never won anything and I finally won a deathmatch tournament, but it was literally the worst night of my fucking life. So stressful and it sucked and I was hurt as hell, but hey, shit happens sometimes.
What's the wear and tear like? I mean, you know,
it's rough, bro. I mean, I hurt like every fucking day. I wake up in pain. Everything clicks. Like there's not like my wrist clicks when I fucking make a fist or I even move it. Both of my knees, like everything on knees, pretty much a fuck it. I've run my 28-year-old body to fucking shit in the last 10 years. But for the most part, I mean, I'm at least healthy, like everything else, but I just hurt a lot. I don't necessarily, I have really bad knees. I've torn my ACL and had to get reconstruction surgery on my left ACL. And that knee still to this day isn't 100%. It's pretty fucked up still. My other knee, I have no cartilage in, so my kneecap floats. And sometimes when it floats, it dislocates, and then I can't
move. And these straight. Injuries are they all wrestling related?
Yes, or? Okay. Yes, 100%. My right knee it dislocates and it will lock to a 90-degree angle, so I won't be able to move it for days on end until it unlocks. Fucking, I've had probably way more concussions than I'm willing to admit. Like there's a lot of wear and tear on what you do. And then just the scars. My whole back is covered. I don't know if you can really see, but
I'm seeing them now. The people watching the video of this will see them. Yeah.
Yeah. My back's pretty covered in scars. I mean, I have, again, weed whacker scars all up my arms from that weed whacker spot still to this day. So I mean, there's a lot of wear and tear. But I kind of wear all, like, maybe not so much the joints and my knees hurting, but I wear all the scars with pride for sure.
Is it just the hardcore spots that leave wear and tear? Is it also, I've always said to people,
it's just wrestling.
That's what I was going to say. I've always tried to explain to people. I've been in, you know, a wrestling ring on the indies, and I'm like, people don't understand. If you're taking bumps off that mat, you know, every day or every other day, or just for a number of days in a week, you know, it's eventually going to wear on your body.
Well, it's not even just that, dude. You have to condition your body when you, in order for it to even handle all of that. Like, so I quit wrestling for 4 years and just came back recently within the last couple. And that first, like, fucking 2 months of getting back in the ring, the amount of welts and, like, purple my body was turning because it just was not used to taking that type of damage was, like, it was concerning as fuck. But then eventually after that first month, I stopped bruising so hard and your body starts to kind of like callous and it gets used to taking all the wear and tear. But in order to even just to get it used to that, bro, it's a painful fucking process. And then, yeah, it takes a lot out of you when you're falling on your back or falling on your fucking face, you know, over and over and over again, you know, you're sitting out and protecting yourself with your hands, your wrists start going, your knees start going. I was going to ask you
about the protecting yourself, because whenever I see those light tube spots, I'm like, or anything involving glass, I'm like, don't you guys worry about like that flying into your eye or something?
So that's why you see a lot of people do this. To make sure it doesn't go into their eye. I'm lucky because of my mask, kind of prevents shit from falling into my eyes a lot. Granted, I've had one very close call where somebody kicked a tube in my face and then a shard went like up into my eyebrow and not my eye. But yeah, people like that, you're supposed to like put your hand up like that to cover your eyes and shit, but a
So
lot
you're
of
supposed
times you
to
forget.
put your hand up in front of your, or your arm up in front of your
Yeah,
eye.
there is a safe, a quote unquote safe way of doing a lot of the deathmatch stuff, but to be honest with you, that's very much an old school mentality. I feel like a lot of the safety of deathmatch wrestling has fallen to the wayside over the last 5 or 6 years.
What? Why in the past 5 to 6? Is it?
Just because things have gotten more reckless and just more like, just I don't give a fuck anymore.
Do you think that's one of the, if there is a criticism to be made of deathmatch wrestling, do you think there is a criticism? I've heard this from people, seen it in Vice documentaries, that people expected a certain level of violence in, say, those Zandig CZW shows years ago, but now what they demand is like more and more and more, and it's
Oh,
gotten crazier because of that,
it
more
well,
dangerous.
yeah, it's gay. I mean, dude, just the weapons that we use alone. Like, when I so it's funny because again, I quit wrestling and stopped doing everything for 4 years, and just in that time period alone, like back when I was wrestling, me taking a gusset plate. For people that don't know what a gusset plate is, it's a metal sheet that holds houses together that has a bunch of like,
It's used to hold roofs together, right?
roofs together, and it has a bunch of like metal spikes on it that go out about that far. And taking a gusset plate in 2017 was a big fucking deal, and it was like, oh my God, holy shit! Now it's just like whatever. It's like, oh, we've seen that 1,000 times now. So people like don't even react to it the same anymore. Which like a lot of people would be like, why do you keep fucking doing it? And like that's kind of where I'm at on certain spots. It's like, all right, well, what's the point of hitting me with like 50 tubes over and over again, not even doing anything to get into it when they've seen that 1,000 times? It doesn't make sense to keep doing it.
Was there a reason you quit the first time?
Oh yeah. Well, one, I after my knee surgery, so I tore my ACL in 2017, and I just did not take care of myself after the surgery, and I gained a shit ton of weight. So when I did come back to wrestling, I was fucking like grossly like I'm a big guy in general, but I was grossly out of fucking shape. I was probably every bit of 400 pounds, maybe a little bit more, and then like I won that tournament and I felt like shit about it because here I am, this out of shape fuck that just got this tournament handed to him. And like a big reason why I didn't take care of myself was just because I really didn't think anybody gave a shit about me in pro wrestling at all. So like I kind of was like ready just to close up shop in general. And then I had and then when I came back, all this opportunity like just fell into my hands, and I was like, well, fuck, I'm not ready for any of this. And it really psychologically took a toll on me. And it got to the point where I started like just pulling out for bookings just because I didn't want to show up because I knew I just wasn't where I needed to be. And after pulling out of 2 shows, I told myself, all right, you're going to go do these last 2 bookings because you're not going to be a piece of shit and pull out of 4 shows in a row. And then you're going to be done. And that's what I did. And I had 2 of the worst matches in my life. And then I quit, and I was very, very bitter for a long time. Very bitter about wrestling and very angry about wrestling and just not wanting anything to do with it. I didn't even watch wrestling for about 3 years straight. But doing the podcast with Todd and Pugs and Dan, all of those guys were guys that watched me wrestle. That's how we all know each other on it. And they were pushing me to come back and do a match. And I started thinking about it, and I was like, all right, fucking let me see if I can get in good enough shape. And if I can get in good enough shape, then I'll see what happens. And I started losing weight, and then on a personal level, my whole life fell apart. My 2 grandparents, who are like parents to me, who I took care of a big portion of my life, they both died like really, really, really fucking like hard. Like it was, my grandma had lung cancer and like she just died a really hard death. And my grandfather, like out of nowhere during the process of her having lung cancer, just one day became unresponsive and he didn't eat for like 7 days and then just died. And then so he died. And then a week later, my grandma died after coming back from his funeral and like literally died right in front of my face. And it really fucked me up. And then my ex, who I was engaged to and was with for 5 years, cheated on me with somebody at her work and was like lying to me about a bunch of shit while I was grieving. And that like just put me so low that I got angry and I was just like, fuck you, fuck this, I'm coming back, not even for anything other than just for me. Like I'm coming back to do this because I need something for me. And that's what I've done since then. And I mean, my life's going good now. Like I've been with this girl for a year now and we're probably gonna get engaged pretty soon and everything's on the up and up. Pro wrestling's going good. My
How does she feel about deathmatch wrestling?
Well, so I told, like, it's one of those things too, where, like when you're in the dating scene, you do it, you kind of have to like be pretty open and upfront with that, because if you're not, they're going to kind of look at you a little bit crazy. So I was very open with it, like within the first couple of days of us talking, and like she thought it was cool and stuff. And she's been there for the cleanup for a couple of them. And she, I don't know, she, you know how chicks are, dude, they like popping pimples and fucking shit like that. So she gets a kick out of pulling glass out of me.
So I got to ask you, when it comes to like being involved in the wrestling business itself, like I said, I've been around people who are deeply involved in it, wrestlers, people that do promotion and stuff. And, you know, I could never get involved myself. Even, I mean, I've had an ex that was involved in the industry and whatnot, but I just feel like, and I'm not saying this like as an attack on like the wrestling cultural scene itself, but it can be a very cutthroat and mercenary kind of, business. Yeah. I mean, people like to say it's a brotherhood, but a lot of wrestlers I know are paranoid as fuck. It's,
oh, dude, you want to talk about
paranoid. I wanted to ask you about this.
Do you want to talk about paranoid? It's like it, and this is me pulling back the curtain heavy, but it was so bad, my paranoia, to where when I started doing the podcast, my paranoia about just everything with just work, it wasn't so much working with Pugs and Todd, but working with Dan. Me and Dan, I used to fucking, like, I literally hated him for a really long period of time because of my paranoia.
Telling some of those early podcasts.
Yeah, it was like my paranoia was just so fucking crazy that I was just like, he's like trying to undermine me or fucking belittle me because I don't know enough about this talk, like crazy shit like that. And then, but it took a long process of realizing that behavior is a little fucking out of control, brother. Like, and it's because of the culture of wrestling. I think a big part of that too is I was a child, like going into wrestling. Like I was 17 when I first met everybody and started training. And that's all I knew for the first, you know, 5 years of my adulthood.
Do you think too that, I think sometimes the wrestlers I've known, there's a lot of wrestlers I've known over the years that, you know, do it like they're on the road constantly. Mm-hmm. And the thing I've noticed is, it's something I've noticed. I'll make a comparison here. You mentioned Extreme Associates earlier. I've known people in the porn industry who mm-hmm. will refer to people that aren't involved as civilians, you know, and I think there's a similar thing with wrestling in a way where, I mean, I think wrestlers live a very different life, especially if they're on the road constantly and it's a full-time gig, where, you know, in a way you have a harder time relating at times to people that are outside of the industry. I don't know what you think of that, but that's an observation that I have.
I think that's why so many wrestlers date other wrestlers. I mean, that's a very common thing. Me personally, not my bag. I don't like that's always scared the shit out of me. Like,
why is that?
Oh, just early on in my career, I dated a rat, and having to see her fucking every show was enough for me to be like, yeah, I'm never fucking around with anybody in wrestling ever again.
Now, what about the promoters? Because I feel like there's good promoters, and then there's some that are money marks that are suckers, and then I feel like there's some that are sharks.
Promoters, just in general, I think on this level of indie wrestling, I feel like a lot of them think that they're WWE and they're just fucking not, and they should be more focused on making money than all this other bullshit. I think that's the biggest problem, is not enough wrestling promoters focus on making money. And also they just focus on pleasing other wrestlers too, rather than just trying to like create a show. I feel like a big part of indie wrestling, and a lot of just the locker rooms that I've been in and out of, they don't have like a set thing on like, this is what we're fucking doing, this is who's going over. There's no ifs, ands, and buts about it. A lot of the bigger companies do, but the smaller companies don't. And they cater to like people wanting like story, their own, booking their own shit basically to do on the show, and rather than just letting bookers do their job. And because of that, not enough people make money.
Have you ever had promoters that like tried to screw you over or anything? Or
There's been plenty of times where I haven't been paid.
Yeah.
And there's also like a lot of times where I've traveled out of state and haven't been paid, which really, really stinks sometimes. I've also just been promised a lot, and I think that's another reason why the psychological part of pro wrestling has taken a big toll. Well, I say it has. I'm a lot better now. Like, I'm a lot more self-aware about what it's done to my psyche, to where like I can kind of stop myself from the weird fucking patterns it's made for me. But it has psychologically taken a toll on my life, and I think a big part of that is because I've had a lot of things promised to me, and then they've never been paid up on. And then I've just gotten my hopes up so many fucking times that like I've been crushed a lot by wrestling, I guess is the best way to put it. And I think promoters, they use that against you a lot. They'll dangle carrots in front of your face to get you to jump through hoops for them, and then never give you the carrot.
Reminds me of Paul Heyman a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And good promoters, like, there's a lot of good promoters that have to fucking do that. But also, like, when you're a wrestler, like, that kind of sucks, especially when you're treated like cattle more times than not.
With regards to the culture I mentioned earlier with, like, the boys or just the wrestlers themselves, I mean, is it – I mean, on one hand, I think it can be, like, it is sort of like this kayfabe brotherhood, right? Like you're all part of the same industry, can relate to each other on a certain level. But I also think it can get really, at least from what I've seen of my friends that were in the industry, it can get very cutthroat and backstabby. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I mean, I had a crew that a big reason why I quit wrestling. This was a little tidbit into it. I had a crew that I traveled with, and two of the people out of the crew, once I got hurt, like immediately just like had turned on me for anybody that like asked about me that was new coming into the town. And there was a certain, I'm not going to get into names, but there was a certain wrestler that came into the town that was known for deathmatch shit. And basically he asked about me because there wasn't many people in my area doing deathmatch stuff. And these two people that I had ridden thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles with, and I had got them booked on so many fucking shows, it wasn't even fucking funny. These two people just totally buried me to this guy. So then when I came back from my injury, this guy just thought I was a total fuckhead and treated me like a piece of shit the whole fucking time. And then like later on explained to me, well, it's because they said this, and this about you. And I'm like, what the fuck? And like, I had never done anything to these fucking people, but help them in the business. Like I had got one of them fucking one of these guys. I remember I was picking up somebody for a show, This guy was staying with him. He wasn't even booked on the show, but his girlfriend like broke up with him. He was all depressed. He's like, can you please get me on the show booked, man? I really, really need it. I fucking got him booked on that shit. And then the second I got hurt, he backstabbed me. Like that's, but that's how the wrestling business is.
I was going to say, this is why I've always like, people will say that they're like, their shoot interviews or out of character interviews for people that don't know are actually worked or fake or whatever. But I've always liked New Jack and Kevin Nash because I actually feel like they kind of tell you about the culture of pro wrestling more than most. Like, you know, when New Jack talks about like, no one went to Cronus's funeral, you know, they talk about brotherhood, but they didn't really give a shit, you know, where Kevin Nash talks about like, it's shark infested waters. They're speaking a lot of truth there from what I've seen just from, you know, having an ex that was involved in the industry.
Yeah, well, I just think in my situation alone, like those motherfuckers probably looked at it like, well, he's hurt right now. He's not getting us booked anywhere. Let's shit talk him to get over with this guy. So if he gets booked anywhere, we could tag along. That's probably what it was. And like, it probably was way less personal than I took it. But also when you like, you ride on the road with people for fucking so long, you know, you think you're friends with them.
And the true friends can be very few and far between, but yeah. I mean, there are people you become tight with. Yeah.
I mean, I've been very lucky, especially because of the West Coast deathmatch scene in California. All of us are pretty fucking tight. We're not super clicky, and like me and Sage Sin Supreme and Kyle Wilde, who runs Crimson Crown, like, and BC Killer, also like the Flesh Wound guys, like all of us, like that we're a part of that, we're all fucking pretty tight. But outside of that, that like there's a reason why I don't like wrestling in fucking Arizona, and it's mainly due because of the culture of locker rooms and just how fucking backstabby people can be in this area.
So you've talked about the craziest spot you've done with the weed whacker and whatnot and the pumpkin spot, but what's the craziest thing you've seen in deathmatch wrestling, not necessarily involving yourself? And has there ever been a point where you're like, oh, maybe this is going too far?
I'm trying to think. I mean, the craziest thing I've ever seen, it was an accident. Andre Verdun in UEW, he was in this tag match and he had this guy like Bobby Hollywood, I think he was trying to like choke him or something, and Bobby Hollywood had a tube and he didn't look to see where he was hitting it, so he just went like this, like he went over the shoulder with it and it smacked Andre in the neck and fucking cut his throat open, and he was bleeding. Oof. Like all over the fucking, like David Arquette's a bitch, dude. This motherfucker's throat was slit.
Because Arquette like bled from like the neck in that match with Nick Gage.
It was a little gash. It wasn't a bit, dude. Andre straight up cut his jugular, bro, and he's just fucking gushing all over the place. And this crazy motherfucker, dude, he's like, get me a towel, fucking puts a towel around his neck, fucking duct tapes the towel on his neck, finishes the match, and then immediately he gets his hand raised and then goes out the fucking door into the car straight to the hospital. I was just like, holy shit.
What's the craziest like fall you've ever seen? Like if you have to rate, because I've seen like the New Jack fall, the Gansbury fall, and then the Vic Grimes thing, Supreme's, you know, falls. But
Homeless Jimmy has a couple of them, dude. Like, so I was.
We're talking about guys that are like falling from outside the ring off like a scaffold or a ladder onto like the concrete a lot of times.
Homeless Jimmy got thrown off a fucking U-Haul onto a barbed wire table that was just like on concrete in a parking lot. And it wasn't a lot of tables. It was one table. That's a pretty bad one. As far as just in general, I mean, I think the Vic Grimes fall was probably like the worst I've ever seen, like on camera or anything, when New Jack threw Vic Grimes off the scaffold.
For people that don't know, he throws him off the scaffold and Vic Grimes falls like on the rope, and it looks like he's going to fall out of the ring onto the concrete, but he bounces off.
New Jack said he was aiming for the fucking for the ring post.
Do you think that's true? How much of New Jack's whole thing do you think is him?
I 100% think that was shoot. Like,
oh, really?
I think that was shoot for sure. I mean, if you hear the whole story and you see the footage of like the why New Jack did that to him, I mean, it makes sense to me. For people that don't know the story, so the reason New Jack tried to kill Vic Grimes and throwing him off this scaffold was because a year prior, Vic Grimes and New Jack had a match and they were supposed to jump off like a balcony and Vic and like to do a move together. And Vic Grimes hesitated and ended up falling on New Jack's head, cracking his skull open and fucking like making brain matter bleed through his nose, which was really bad. And he lost sight in his eye. So that was New Jack's revenge.
He's one of the, I mean, I think he just passed away. What, last year, right?
Yeah. Last year or the year before.
I think, you know, I've had people say to me, he's like the last wrestler that you like, you didn't know, right?
Yeah.
If it was kayfabe or not. Like what I mean by that is I mentioned those guys like Abdullah the Butcher or the Sheik earlier where, you know, I know people that grew up on their wrestling and like they would believe everything was fake except the Sheik or Abdullah. And New Jack is like the last, he was like the last wrestler that was like that. Where, you know, I've shown people that aren't into wrestling footage of him doing the stabbing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or the Gypsy Joe match. If people can look this stuff up, they'll learn about it. But they're like, oh my God, this dude's crazy.
Yeah.
That's real, you know?
Yeah. Him cracking Gypsy Joe with that baseball bat. Like, that. Yeah. It's, but again, like, I don't think New Jack ever lived the gimmick. It was just him. Like that, he was just him, the 100%.
It was like, so wild watching him too in ECW when they would have the what was it? Natural Born Killers.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
then they would the play time. Throughout the whole match, and he would bring out the shopping cart.
Yeah, dude, that's it. Old school ECW New Jack, dude, was one of my favorites. Fucking, and his dives, dude, were crazy. I love how like raw he is about it. Yeah, I was just coked up as fuck, had to get high to get high.
I like his you ever watch his Smoky Mountain run?
Oh yeah, dude, his OJ promo.
Jesus. Oh my God, where he's like, shout out to my brother OJ.
No, he says shout out to my brother OJ, keep up the good work. One less to worry about.
I shouldn't laugh, but
dude, but like for to get heat in a southern area at the time, holy fucking shit! Like, did it work?
Talk about that for a bit. What is, for people that don't know, what is heat and how do you get it in a match?
So what heat is it's getting the fans pissed off at you. Now, like that, for me, heat is very different. Heat for me is just being like a nasty motherfucker, like trying to like rip somebody's nose off or do something dirty. But like for a lot of people, it's talking shit to the fans and pissing them off while you're beating up their hero. And like the biggest way to get heat just for most people is talking shit to fans. But for me, it's a little bit harder because I do have, like, when I do wrestle, I don't talk at all.
Yeah, you're like the monster character that, you know, can't speak, you know?
Yeah. So for me, like, I got to get heat by, like, trying to, like, rip somebody's eyeball out.
We've mentioned barbed wire a few times, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this before we close out. But what's it like working with the barbed wire matches?
So it's funny because I actually have my first ever no rope barbed wire match coming up, at the end of this month, but, just barbed wire in general. I mean, I don't mind it. The only thing I hate about barbed wire, like more than it just, so like with glass and stuff that more cuts you up, but barbed wire scratches you, and that's what really fucking hurts. Like it like just having like a big ass long scratch going down your back or something like that, it becomes annoying. But like probably the worst thing with barbed wire is it just destroys the fuck out of your gear. Like it just tears your shit up. So like every time you have a barbed wire match, you have to like take a good couple of hours sewing your fucking gear back together afterwards.
So what are you doing to prep for the no rope barbed wire match?
I was always
told in those matches, I've talked to wrestlers, they say you have to hit it as quickly as possible. And so yeah.
So like, just for me personally, I'm just like, I've talked to a couple of people that have done them before, just for advice. Other than that, though, I'm just watching a lot of tape. Like, there's nothing I can really technically like do to prep my body for it, other than just like
a lot of it just mind over matter. That's what I'm getting from you.
Mind over matter, and also just like, I don't know, when I'm in there, man, I barely feel any of this shit till after, like
just because of the adrenaline rush, or
the adrenaline. And like, once I start bleeding, like my adrenaline is so high, like I don't even get fucking tired in there half of the time. Like, it just, it really does something for me that like, but then like the day after, I feel like I got into a car wreck. But why it's happening, like I really don't feel much. So there's not much I can do to prep my body, but at least my mind. I've been watching a lot of like no rope barbed wire matches, just trying to see what I could take from some of the great ones that have happened in history. I'm a big tape guy when it comes to my matches, and people get a little bit annoyed at me because I like knowing what I do before, or what I'm doing before, like a couple of days before the show, so I could start prepping and watching whoever I'm wrestling shit, so I know what they're doing, because it just makes like matches easier. So other than just watching no rope barbed wire matches, I've also just been watching some matches of my opponent to know like some of his offense and how we can make our shit work together.
What I've always been told with any kind of like hardcore matches, the more hesitant you are, the more likely you are to get hurt.
Yeah, you have to just commit. Yeah, just commit, dude. Like when you're hitting stuff, you got to really just throw yourself into it and kind of just give up your body, because if you don't, you're going to get fucked up way worse. There's so many times, man, where I've seen, like, for example of that, like I've seen people getting thrown over the rope outside the ring, and like their body will just naturally try to grab the rope to stop the momentum, and it will always like end up injuring them rather than just like just letting yourself get thrown over the top rope.
That's another thing I was going to ask you about, is like, is there a lot of muscle memory when it comes to like pro wrestling? Like, because I've heard that, you know, certain guys can't take like the AJ Styles clash spot because they'll, you know, they duck their head in, you know. Yeah, that's muscle memory, you know.
It's muscle memory, but also with stuff like
I'm being very specific with that one, but
I've actually taken that move though, and like, it's also like when you're in it, you just kind of have to be like, look up, you know, because your body's natural reaction anytime you're taking most of the stuff is to tuck. But yeah, there's a ton of muscle memory, and it's funny, like when I started training again after being gone for 4 years, like my body definitely felt like shit, but like I right away still remembered how to like run the ropes and do chain wrestling and bump and all that shit.
What's that feel like when you come out from the entrance, go to the ring, and then have the match? It just feels like time flows differently during a match. Like it can.
You talking about the time stuff, I have something specific. I had this match with this guy, Judge Joe Dredd. This was back last July. I was just very, very nervous for the match because it was only my second match back, and my first match I didn't really have much to do. I kind of just came out, beat up some people, and that was it. This was like an actual one-on-one match. And Joe Dredd at the time was like starting to really get some like recognition in the deathmatch scene. Now he's become like a real deathmatch name, but this is a few months ago. We had our match, and it almost felt like I woke up from a dream by the end of it. Like, it didn't feel like I was out there like and did it. It was so weird. For me, sometimes I'll just kind of go into a trance when I'm doing my gimmick, that like I kind of will come out the end of it, and I'll also just, time in general feels so much quicker when you're out there than it really like is.
Why do you think that is? Is it just the adrenaline rush, or
I think it's the adrenaline, and I think it's the adrenaline, and also just your mind is constantly like going in there. It's like really like, all right, we got to this now. Like, and now I'm like thinking about, all right, what's the next spot we're getting into? So you're not like really sitting there and letting anything soak in mentally at all. Like, you may be sitting there selling and stuff, but while you're selling, you're going through like, all right, what's the next spot that I have to get into?
What's it like, the fan interaction like for you? I mean, do you feed off it at all? I mean, you know, I think people look at it and they're like, well, these deathmatch shows, that the audiences are so much smaller than WWE. How can, like, but I think the deathmatch wrestlers that I know still feed off that audience. Maybe it's because the audience is more intimate since it is smaller.
More intimate audiences, personally, for me, I think, or just having fans closer to you is like a big thing too, being able to feed off their energy. Like, I do like shows where, like, mostly non-deathmatch shit, because I don't want fans getting cut the fuck up and having to get blamed for that. But, like, having fans, like, right up against the ring, I love shows like that, just because you could feed off their energy. And for my character specifically, like, I'll try to find one person that's creeped out by me, or at least, or even just disgusted. Like, I'll, like, stick my tongue out and, like, lick the side of my fucking mask, or, like, lick my opponent or something, and try to find somebody, go, ugh, and then I'll channel all my shit just to that person. So I'm
That's the beauty of pro wrestling, because only in pro wrestling can you get away with doing that. Yeah. You know, I was talking at a horror movie convention with Danielle Harris once. And she was saying, you know, she had a stalker before, so I can't believe that people do this. But she was telling me how she hates it when, like, a guy will dress up as Michael Myers at a con and just stand looking at her and, like, breathe heavily just to fuck with her. I'm like, that is fucking weird, dude. Like, people do that to you? But in your setting, you can do that and get away with it, like, in a wrestling match. You know?
Yeah, well, and I also, like, I just started being way cooler about doing, like, gimmick like in gimmick interviews and stuff, but like back in the day, dude, I was the king of kayfabe. Like, if you saw me in the mask, motherfucker, I was not talking to you. I would do some shit like you were just saying, dude. I would just come out of the locker room, like, during intermission, and just find somebody and just, like, just stare at them like this in the fucking corner the whole time.
That's awesome, because I mean that is like the wrestling this is the one profession now, where you can actually do that, and it's okay.
Yeah, but wrestling is different now, though. Like, people will fucking get all butthurt about it now, I think. Like, it's...
I mean, what? Being the scary monster wrestler? They get butthurt about it?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I don't know. Just in general, I don't know how closely you follow wrestling culture, but a lot of people just get offended by, like, the littlest things now, and it's become a very ultra sensitive thing. So if I was to do that now, I feel like somebody would be call me a creeper.
Closing out here, what do you think of the documentaries that have come out over the, you know, past few years about, you know, deathmatch wrestling? And I mentioned the Raka Raka documentary that's coming up. What do you think about the documentary treatments? What did they get right? What do they maybe get wrong?
Well, I'm excited about the Raka Raka doc, because I know a lot of people that are going to be in it. But the one thing is, I think it's funny because maybe they don't look so successful, like, on camera in these things, but they do focus a lot on the successful deathmatch wrestling, like, scenes. And I think it would be more interesting to see, like, what's the psyche of somebody that's doing this in front of 12 people in fucking, you know, the deep South somewhere? Like, because that also is just a very different person. Or somebody like me that, like, has been grinding away in the West Coast, where it wasn't that popular for a very long time, and most of our crowds were less than, you know, 80 people. I think that perspective would be a little bit more interesting than just seeing all the people that are doing it at the highest level. But I'm still very, very excited for the Raka Raka doc. And the one thing I think that the Sick Nick Mondo documentary got done so well, it's called The Trade, for anybody that hasn't seen it. He really dives into the psychological aspect of how we're able to allow our bodies to go through this. Like, what's off in our heads that's causing us to, you know, want to mutilate ourselves in front of people.
You got into that a bit earlier. What for you is the psychological aspect? Like, if you were to analyze it more deeply.
If I was to analyze myself, one thing is I had a self-harming problem when I was a kid. Even when I was little, I used to hit myself or fucking, you know, like just do like destructive things to myself. And like growing into my like teenage years, you know, I got into like cutting myself and shit like that. And I feel like this kind of, and this is the really fucked up part about it, but it gives me a similar release that cutting did, which is really kind of sad. But also it's a little bit more like accepting because I'm doing it towards an art and like I'm sacrificing my body for art. And that's kind of made myself feel a little bit more comfortable doing it. And just another thing is like, I got into it, like, you know, all of us, I think, have some sort of trauma that allows us to be okay with mutilating our bodies for entertainment.
Why do you consider it an art, by the way?
When it's done right, it's art. Sometimes, you know, art can be very subjective. So, I mean, anybody can really call anything art. But for me, the art of deathmatch wrestling is watching somebody go through immense pain and suffering and overcoming it and being able to still perform the art of pro wrestling while injured and just while fucking like driven through a meat grinder, being able to still tell the story of pro wrestling. I think that's why it's considered art. And pro wrestling just in general, it's art. It's telling a story. It's almost like it's basically like dance when you really want to look at it. It's just,
or even like it's like a, I mean, I hate to put it this way, but it's like modern mythology, like the gladiator battles, but yeah, you know, for today, you know, it's like,
yeah, absolutely,
it's often like a Hercules story or
let's be real. You damn well know motherfuckers back in the day were probably taking jobs too, dude. Like it was probably a work back in the day, some of the gladiator shit. Like it's a very interesting form of entertainment, but but deathmatch wrestling is just like, it's a very, I see it as the grungy dark side of pro wrestling that like is a very little niche thing, but it's just like, the punk scene and, you know, fucking having somebody's band called Anal Cunt or something like that, you know, like,
well, it's kind of the island of misfit toys in a way. Yes. I mean that in the best way possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I would consider all of us is like, we're like the misfits of pro wrestling.
So I want you to be able to plug Flesh Wound Features and your involvement absolutely with that.
Yeah, so I do a horror movie podcast. We also cover true crime stuff, some comedy, also some wrestling stuff. So it's Flesh Wound Features on YouTube. And also we have a website, fleshwoundfeatures.com. And we have a Patreon, patreon.com/fleshwoundfeatures. And it starts at just $1. And also myself, if you want to follow my wrestling career, I'm Michael Kruger on Facebook, Michael Kruger Live 666 on Instagram. And yeah, feel free to follow me. And also my podcast has a Discord server called the Flesh Wound Features Discord server.
I need to get on the Discord at some point.
Yeah, yeah. The link should be on our YouTube channel. And also it will be on our website as well. So.
And I'm going to have you back on in October when I do my Halloween shows because do a show on Hellraiser or something.
Oh, dude, I'm totally game, dude. I'm glad to be back whenever.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Mike Kruger. Be sure to check out Flesh Wound Features, the horror movie podcast. They also do a wrestling podcast called the Squared Circle Society, and their Patreon has a lot of exclusive content related to Mike Kruger's career. They do watch-alongs and things of that nature of Mike's matches, so check out Flesh Wound Features. They're on YouTube. And of course, if you appreciate the work here I do at Parallax Views, covering everything from current events to things like deathmatch wrestling, then please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. One more time, that's patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said,
until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views to Parallax Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.